device, anytime at thinkblink.com, and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Back, everybody, to the Elise Blink Show, live on Sundays here, 11 to 1, although we're going to end a little bit early today. Got a little sports coming out on News Talk WSB. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time. The website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. When you're there, don't forget to sign up for our free weekly newsletter. The newsletter, it's sort of interesting. I mean, we have 8,000 or 9,000 people every week who are on the ThinkLink newsletter, and what they find every single time is great information that helps them understand just a little bit more about what's going on in their world. And we do it with a lot of the information that we put up on CBS News at Money Watch, where we have just had, there's just been so much. I mean, the last 3 weeks, for example, mortgage interest rates have been at this all-time low. And so we blog about that on Money Watch. You might get information about fabulous, ridiculously fabulous homes that have sold, like this week, and we haven't even put this up on Money Watch yet, but this week we had an $88 million penthouse in Manhattan sell. It is the most expensive piece of real estate to sell in Manhattan, I think, maybe ever, or at least the most expensive condo, which is kind of amazing. So those are kind of the things that we talked about, that we talk about every week on Money Watch. But in addition to that, right, it's all the other stuff you need to know, like the Obama housing crisis and what's going on with the different fixes that are in and whether or not it's going to work. You also get great information from the Equifax Finance blog, so I encourage you to go there as well, where we introduced our new family money section, and it has taken off like wildfire. So great information there as well. That's what you can find on the free weekly newsletter, so I encourage you to go and sign up for it. And if you do go to thinklink.com, what you will also see are some cool new buttons that Alex, my son Alex, designed for us yesterday. I got to tell you, having a graphic designer in the family, even if he's only 16, an amazing thing for a small business owner. Right then, right there, he was creating things in Photoshop yesterday. So you get to see some of Alex's fabulous work in the blue boxes on the side, talking about things like eCredible, which we talk about all the time, or the Equifax Finance blog. All right, down to business. 404-872-0750. Lines are wide open. Delighted that you could join us. What a week in the stock market. I think I have to start there because we saw the Dow rise by about 150 points, ending just shy of 13,000. It is the highest point that we've been at in 4 years. And I have to say, I do wonder, given that people in Greece are asking for the biscuits off of strangers' coffee cups, if this is really going to last. But it'll probably last for at least a little while longer. And in the meantime, it's making everybody feel just a whole lot better. In the Eurozone, however, finance ministers had to postpone a vote on the bailout package for Greece. Why? Until this week, because everybody continues to be concerned about the implementation of the austerity measures. I mean, there was a really interesting story in the New York Times Magazine today about how people in Greece are actually living. There are some places and businesses that are doing fine and even doing better, but there are a whole lot of people who, scarily enough, don't have any way to support themselves. There's not a huge homeless problem, but there's definitely an income problem. Let's call it that. So very interesting to see how this continues to unravel. We also heard from Moody's this week that more than 100 financial institutions in the U.S. and Europe face possible credit downgrades because of the Eurozone crisis and the challenges facing sovereign nations. Bank of America is on review. Citigroup, Morgan Stanley, Barclays, and UBS Last week, earlier, Moody slashed the ratings on Italy and Spain and warned the UK that it could lose top status as well. Frankly, a year ago, any of that would have toppled the U.S. stock market. This year, not so much as a blip, which is kind of interesting. I sat with some folks in New York this week who are bankers, and they tell me that, you know, maybe you saw this memo last week, all of the bankers basically had their bonuses in New York capped at about $100,000. It doesn't mean that $100,000 is all that they earned as a bonus. And that sounds, I know, like a huge amount of money to people who live in Atlanta and elsewhere, right? $100,000. I wrote a story 20-something years ago for for the former Worth magazine that was called Living on $100,000, basically portraying $100,000 back then as for a family with two incomes and some kids as not being all that much money, which is sort of interesting. Now we're talking about bankers in New York getting $100,000 instead of $1 million bonus and what that means to them. And it means something quite significant, as it happens. But worse is that the bankers told me that they expect there to be another massive round of layoffs in their industry. They've lost tens of thousands of people already. And a real estate agent that I had breakfast with this week in New York told me that even though she doesn't, usually this time of year is very active for real estate agents because all the, you know, Wall Street people are out there banking their bonuses in terms of buying places to live. And this year, not so much. And so she said it's been really interesting. People are still buying. People are still selling. It's taking a really, really long time. So getting the real estate market to move in lockstep with the stock market never happened before. Isn't going to happen again. It's going to be a very, very long slog, but very interesting nonetheless. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station, and lines are still open. I'm going to continue to chat a little bit about the economy. There was a lot of interesting stuff that happened this week. I have to say, I saw a memo that came out from Freddie Mac to its servicers, telling them that they expect them to not pursue deficiency judgments against short sales. So how does that work? That's sort of interesting, and I know something that everybody in Atlanta will be very interested to know. So when you, in some states, and Georgia is one of them, if you sell your house at a short sale, there's a difference between what you owe, right, and what you owe the lender and what you can actually get for the house. And in many states, the lenders reserve the right to go after you for the deficiency judgment. And during this Great Recession, they haven't been doing it. So it was really interesting to see this letter come out from Freddie Mac basically saying we are not going to, we don't want you to pursue the short sale deficiency judgments. You know, we are expecting you to not do that, which is sort of interesting. And I'm wondering how long everybody's going to play along with that. But maybe it's part of what's going on behind the scenes. There's a lot that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac don't like to talk about. And there's a lot of internal fighting going on in D.C., which is fascinating. I was also in D.C. this week. It was kind of a wild week, right? I was in D.C. on Tuesday and Wednesday. I took the train to New York City, which was amazing to get out of an airport for a change and be on the train. Fantastic. Got off at Penn Station, hopped on the C train up north to my sister's house in the Upper West Side. And it was so incredibly fast and easy to get around. So I was in New York on Thursday and New Jersey on Thursday and Friday. And really interesting to kind of see the difference in what's going on in D.C. and what's going on in New York City and how people are starting to make things work. Really interesting, especially this is a holiday week for many, many people in around the country. Schools are out in some places. We've had President's Day weekend. For others, my kids are off, and they're so happy to have an extra day of sleep, for sure. Anyway, so going back to the economy, we have also been seeing a push to different kinds of information on taxation. You know, as we see the candidates, the Republican candidates, continue to march through the primary season, right, we've started to see some interesting numbers come out. So we had the budget come out, which was just an astonishing number, $3.8 trillion for fiscal 2013, proposing to generate $1.4 trillion in new revenue over 10 years, right, $140 billion a year, with a range of tax increases on the upper end. But the plan is also seeking to replace the alternative minimum tax with a 30% tax on those earning at least $1 million. That's called the Buffett rule. Because Warren Buffett's been out there saying, I think everybody who makes $1 million a year should actually pay more in taxes. We can afford it and we should pay it. It also calls for the dividend taxes on the wealthy to rise to 39.6%. And this comes out of news that Mitt Romney, who mostly earns, a couple hundred, maybe earns $10 million a year, $15 million a year, and pays about an average of 14% in taxes. I think that this is sort of in a response to it. Really interesting. It's sort of also in response, I think, to the whole Occupy movement. And we haven't heard as much about it, but I can tell you it is in force. In the hotel that I stayed at in Washington, D.C., they were literally right below me on the plaza. And I took a picture. I should probably post it on thinklink.com. Maybe I'll do that later. Out of my hotel window. And maybe there were 20 or 30 tents that were out there. And it was interesting. It wasn't like it was that crowded. There wasn't, a huge police force around it. But they were certainly there, and they're certainly making some noise, which was really fascinating. Have to sort of wonder, where that's going to go as we move further along the path to the election. But anyway, so the budget came out. One of the things that was also interesting this week is we saw an agreement on maintaining the tax discounts for people working, payroll tax discounts that have been in place for the last couple of years. It also put off any deal on reducing physicians' pay who are getting reimbursed by Medicare, which is really fascinating as well. So there was a lot of news that week, in that way this week, that I think is going to have just a big, big voice as we move forward toward the election. All right, 404-872-0750. Let's take a quick call before we go to break. June joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, June. Why am I not hearing you? Let's try again. June? June, you there?
Yes, I am. Is this Elise?
It is Elise. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you for taking my call.
Delightful. Go ahead.
Well, I'm hoping that maybe I can sell my home this year. And I've had it forever. And I'm wondering if they still will allow the, in case I can't sell it this year, what would the, will the exemption go out at the end of this year for the first $250,000 that you, capital gains?
No. The good news is that is not on the table. Nobody is, first of all, the fact that you might have $250,000 of gains, wow, more power to you.
I own this house forever. I'm entitled to it.
Listen, God bless. There are a lot of people who've owned their houses for a long time and are not as fortunate as you. But no, the tax code states that the first $250,000 of profit for a single person, or $500,000 if you're married, is protected. And you may take that tax-free when you sell your primary residence, as long as you've lived there at least for 2 years.
And that will, that is not going to be up for question if we get a new Congress, a new...
I have not heard anything in that direction. That seems to be what I would call settled law. Nobody is talking about that whatsoever.
It's kind of on the subject. Have they ever considered maybe staggering capital gains, so that if you've had something for a very long time, you get a bigger break on the capital gains than if you've only had it for a year?
Well, it's interesting. They divided it into short term, which is less than a year, and long term, which is anything over a year. And again, haven't heard
20 years.
Yeah, I have not heard
40 years, 10 years. There's a big difference.
It is, but it's not always... Okay, so agreed. Holding an asset for a really long period of time is different than holding it for a shorter period of time, so 5 years versus 20 years. But I'm not sure we want to encourage behavior like that. Things change, and the tax rate is very, very low for long-term capital gains. I mean, it's very, very low. And I'm not sure you'd want to... Pardon?
What about people with family farms and things? I mean, that's a lifetime ownership deal.
Correct, but
so I would think they should get a bigger break than somebody who goes in and buys a house and turns it over in 2 or 3 years.
Well, family farms can be a little bit different than a primary residence because they're also businesses, so they face very different kinds of tax rates, and maybe people, there's a lot of energy that's spent on the family farm world. I have to tell you, Gene, my understanding is that there aren't really all that many family farms left out there. Many of the big ones that are old to get out, they sell it to corporate farming interests. There are people who now hold those for investment purposes. But, maybe that's an idea. But I don't know that in this country we need to keep cutting taxes on things. I think we maybe need to restructure who's paying the taxes so that we bring in more revenue. My personal opinion. Thanks for your call. 22 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
28 minutes past the hour on the Elise Klink Show. Thanks so much for joining us today. Our number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm tweeting online. Join me there. I'm at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. And if you're not a fan of the Facebook page, you ought to be. All kinds of cool stuff there as well. When we come back, we're going to take your calls. There is so much mortgage information going on right now. As I said earlier in the show, mortgage interest rates for the third week in a row hit the all-time record low. They just stayed there, hung out. Unbelievable. So we're going to talk about what that means for you and whether you can figure out how to qualify for a loan. You want to be able to take advantage of these rates, don't know quite how to do it, and home equity is a problem. We're the place with the answers. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Klink. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more on News Talk WSB.
Anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
37 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Klink. Thanks for joining us today. We have a bit of a shortened show. Got some ball games coming up about 12:35. It's going to be starting the pregame action, so stay tuned for that. Let's go to the phones. We've got a whole bunch of people hanging on here. Patrick joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hey, Patrick.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. What about you?
I'm doing fairly well. I actually had a mortgage question that I wanted to run by you, see if I could get some advice. I'm actually currently going through a remodification with one of the big banks. I do have an FHA loan. This was my first time home. I bought it in 2008. And unfortunately, at the end of the year last year, last quarter, I was actually cut on my salary, so I started to apply for the remodification. Well, it's now going into February, and I still have no answers, and they're actually telling me over the next couple of weeks they should have a decision. And I was just wondering if that is declined, if I'm declined for the remodification because they're going through some sort of HAMP program, what would be my next step to avoid losing my home?
So you're calling it remodification. I would call it loan modification.
Right.
Right. So the loan modification program should be pretty easy with an FHA loan.
Okay.
So I'm kind of confused why it's taking them so long to figure this out.
I've actually started this. Believe it or not, all of this started going downhill in October of last year. And they would not work with me until, they said I had to show that I was struggling and be behind on my mortgage. So in January, I'm, of course, now behind, 4 or 5 months later. And they've had the paperwork since January. And as of 2 weeks ago, I'm still waiting on an escrow statement. I actually went and sat down with them face-to-face because it's one of the big banks that has a local center here in Atlanta.
Right. And, which one, Chase?
Chase. And they're actually working. I've actually got a lady that I've been working with really well up in the Cumberland area, but it's now in underwriting, and I'm not sure what the problem is because they have all the information. They're not requesting anything. Nothing's getting lost in the mail because I did a face-to-face sit down with them and had all the paperwork in hand.
So it could just, it could, okay, so you've been waiting about a month?
It's actually going on, well, now, yeah, from the last time it's been a month, because I started this in 1st of January, right after Christmas.
Okay.
And I had all the paperwork in hand, and she said it would take right out about 30 days. And, of course, I don't know what happened with some escrow information that they had to get on their own, on their end. But
it could take a little longer than 30 days is what's required by HAMP. So it's already a little bit longer. Have you called them?
Yes. I speak with them once a week. And
right.
As of last week, it's 2 weeks. They should have a decision. And my concern is after you get... When you get into the 60-day mark, and I'm currently 4 months, they're actually, you know, they say, well, we can't accept a payment unless you have half. So I'm digging a hole deeper and deeper, and I'm so afraid they're going to come to me March 1st and say, okay, where's your $8,000? You know, we're going to close April 1st if we don't have it.
So
that is my concern.
All right, that's a huge concern, and I'm sure you're not sleeping very well right now.
Exactly.
I totally get it. Okay, so I think what you want to do is try and figure out why, you know, it's they've gone beyond. You don't want to antagonize them and say, hey, by the way, you're required by law to get this to me in 30 days.
Right.
But you do, and by the way, you were not required by law to be late on your mortgage for HAMP.
Okay.
It's just a complete fabrication of the truth. I don't know why lenders tell people this. It's not true.
Right.
They want you to be late because it puts them in a better position, but there's no reason for you to be late.
Right. So, well, I knew my salary got cut in half back in September.
So you
and
were going to
started
be...
this. Yeah, I started this program, and you know my mortgage is not a big mortgage. It's $1,300 right now, but when your mortgage, I mean, when your salary gets cut in half, you know, and you start accruing fees, and you know it's multiple months after month after month. You know, when your salary is cut in half, how can you expect to come up with $8,000 or $10,000 to?
All right, so let's give you some things to think about, some options, some plan B's and C's, right? So if you get turned down for this, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to file a complaint with the OCC, which regulates Chase.
Okay.
And the OCC's website is called helpwithmybank.gov. Helpwithmybank.gov. You're going to get a case number. You're going to explain what happened. And you're gonna ask them to go look into it, and you're gonna send me the case number, and then I'm gonna forward it to somebody at the OCC so somebody looks at it much more quickly.
Okay.
Okay. That's the first thing that's gonna happen. So that's a plan B. The second thing you're gonna do is you're gonna call back Chase and ask them to look at it again.
All right.
With an FHA, what is your interest rate on your loan?
6%.
Okay. So with a 6% rate on an FHA loan, they're supposed to be able to just simply lower the interest rate on the loan.
Okay.
So that may not be enough to get you where you need to go.
Right.
But they may be able to lower it off the bat from 6% to maybe 4.5%.
Okay.
It's not the very lowest rate, but, you know. And I assume
every
little bit helps. I assume you're underwater. Is that right?
Actually, I'm not. I bought my house in 2008 on short sale.
Oh, okay.
And it's I actually got a really good deal on it, and the going, I guess, and they're actually starting new construction in my neighborhood, which is a good thing as well. But right now, I think my mortgage, it's a 4-bedroom, 2.5, 3.5 bath house, and it's in the Gwinnett County neighborhood. And, you know, it's a good area. It's not, you know, it's a fairly new development as well. And the houses in here, before I purchased, we're going for upwards of $299. Of course, I have no basement, but I bought on short sale, and I'm running neck and neck right now with what most real estate is selling for in the area.
Great. So that's wonderful news. So what you need to do is just you need to push these folks at Chase just to make sure, and you want to get ready with the Help with My Bank.
Okay.
You're going to, if you can also call... I'm sure you maybe started with the Homeowners for Help hotline. I hope I said that right. It's the 888-995-HOPE.
Okay.
That number is staffed by HUD-certified housing counselors, and you can call them, and they will talk to you about what other options you have.
Okay.
And because your loan is FHA,
right?
They know what options you're supposed to have.
Okay, and what would be my, do you have any idea what would the options that, you know, Chase may come back with? Because I've heard several things. I had another family member that had an issue with Bank of America and actually had to get a HUD representative in with them on a three-way call to negotiate terms because she had such an ordeal with the other big bank.
Well, that's what these people do. The HUD, that's what the HUD certified housing counselors do. You should probably call them tomorrow and just walk through the specifics of your case and say, what are my options going to be?
Okay.
If they say no, and they may say, well, let's get that person on the line right now and find out why this is taking longer than 30 days. They may say that. The trick is that you never know who you're going to get at the other end of the phone. So they're a HUD certified housing counselor, right? But some are better than others.
Right.
It's just like customer service when you call in. Clark likes to call it no customer service, but I find that once in a while you get a good person. But if you get a terrible person, you should just hang up rather than like expending all the energy to fight them.
Right.
And try again, because your luck is just as good that you might get a better person.
Right. Well, and that's one thing with this ordeal with Chase is the lady that I've been working with here locally in the, you know, gathering my information. I mean, she's really been on top of things. She's, you know, she tries to keep me informed, but when it goes to underwriting, it just seems to get lost, you know.
Yes, underwriting is like some huge hole that people and cases and houses just fall into willy-nilly. It must be like the black hole of real estate. That's what it is, right? And the more people fall into it, the bigger and stronger and more powerful it gets, so more people fall into it. Yeah, I think so. Patrick, I don't know. Do you feel better?
I do. And like I said, this actually some, you know, a start because, like you said, I wonder from night to night, where am I going to be next month? So this would actually, this has given me a direction to go just in case because I am so worried that I'm digging a hole that I'm not going to be able to get out of.
Well, that is a real concern. But if you call the Homeowners Hope for hotline tomorrow and just have a conversation with them, I think you're going to feel a lot better when you hear what they specifically have to say. And then get back in touch with Chase. Just keep working with them. And then you always know that you can do the helpwithmybank.gov. And then call me back if it's still, you know, if you need another little dose of reassurance on a Sunday morning, you know where I am.
Well, I do appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Patrick. Have a good Sunday. 46 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Wendy joins us on the line. Hey, Wendy.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question.
Okay.
For my son. I'm calling on behalf of him, and the question is, what do you recommend? My son owns a condo. He bought it a few years ago for $100,000, and he's been trying to sell it for over a year for $70,000.
Mm-hmm.
And it is underwater.
Yep.
He tried to take advantage of one of the government programs, and he's been denied because he has too much money, or makes too much money, and because he's responsible and he pays his bills.
Okay.
And needless to say, he's frustrated, and he still has the house on the market trying to sell it. Recently, he got a letter from his loan originator, or the company that holds the loan, and they said that he was eligible for a refinance. So the rub on that, I thought it would have been like a clause where you could refinance for 30 years because it's a interest-only loan.
Mm-hmm.
The rub is they only allow him 1 year. And there's nothing in the loan that says he could refinance for a 30-year mortgage fix because he would like to keep the place, rent it, and then take advantage of low interest rates, and then maybe he wanted to be able to move to another location.
So let's see if I understand. So how much does he still owe on the property?
Probably $100,000 because it was an interest only loan.
Okay.
Okay. So if he
means he's not eligible. See, the problem that he's run into is that he's not eligible to refinance for an interest only loan. It's not a Fannie Mae Freddie Mac loan, correct?
Mm-hmm, correct.
And it's not an FHA loan.
Right.
So he went, you know, he bought something he probably couldn't have afforded, or maybe he could have and he thought he was being really smart.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't put anything down.
Correct.
And now he's kind of screwed. Sorry. And that's for everybody else at home. You already know this. So,
yes.
So he's paying his bills. What about just renting the property now?
I don't know if he would get enough to cover all of the expense. The rent. Well, he would for this year. Yes, he could. He is thinking of doing that, but he would have probably a little bit of a deficit.
That is
an option, yes.
And that's just, he's a little bit of a deficit, but he gets to move on with his life. And he's got, how long is his interest-only loan good for? Did he buy it as a...
That's the weird thing. They said he could only refinance for 1 year.
No. I'm sure, well, maybe that's what it says. But the original loan on it is, what is that, a 30-year interest-only loan or a 10-year interest-only?
I
then
don't
it converts?
Know that answer. I'm sorry.
So here's what how those loans typically work, just so you know. So they're interest-only for usually a period of about 10 years. And then at 10 years, they convert into some sort of fixed rate loan or a 1 year adjustable loan. But what's key here is that the loan now becomes principal and interest because the bank wants its money back.
Right.
So he now has a 20-year payout on the $100,000.
Okay.
So that's going to bump up his monthly expenses significantly. It might even be twice as much.
Interesting. Okay.
So What I'm trying to say is, so let's say he can get $1,000 a month for this place. I'm making up that number, but let's just say it's $1,000 a month.
He did rent it at one time for $900.
Okay, so $1,000 it's just easier math, frankly, for me.
Okay.
For my brain, not enough caffeine on a Sunday morning. So $1,000 a month, but now he's reached the point at 10 years where this loan is going to convert. And now he's going to have to, it's fully amortized, so it'll be paid off entirely in the 20-year period. And that means his $1,000 a month, if that's the cost, might jump up to $1,800 a month.
Oh, okay.
Right? So if his cost is $1,000, he's renting it for $1,000 or even $900. He's not that short. It's $1,200 a year. Big deal.
Mm-hmm.
In the big grand scheme of things, if he's short $1,200 a year, no big deal. The problem is when he's going to be short, say, $1,200 a month.
Right.
So he's got to figure out what's going on. Now, has he done any payments to try and pay down this mortgage?
No. That's the problem.
Why not?
Probably because he's driving a new car, and that kind of thing.
Okay. I also notice, not that it isn't great that you're calling, Wendy. Mm-hmm. He's not calling.
Yes.
Why isn't he calling?
Because he wants me to keep out of it, and I'm trying to help him as a parent.
Okay. And what is his plan?
His plan is to keep it on the market and try to sell it and then pay the difference once they sell it.
Does he have the difference, $30,000?
No, he doesn't. That's the rub. That's the other rub.
I see. The mysterious $30,000 that's going to materialize when he sells the property. Okay.
I don't know.
So
I wondered if I could buy the place and rent it.
$70,000. The lenders will never let you because you're his mom.
Right. He told me that. He said because I'm a relative and I'm too close and
right. It's not an arm's length transaction.
Right.
And they would never approve a short sale like that for you.
Okay.
So let's just start at the bottom line and say you can't fix this for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to. He's going to I'm sorry to say this because I don't know your son. I'm sure he's a lovely man. He's going to have to grow up about this and understand that a brand new car is not going to help him very much when he's trying to scrape together $30,000 to get this down. If he can find a way to pay down the loan to $70,000, he'll be able to refinance. He'll be able to do a whole lot of other things. But at the moment, he's not going to be able to. And he's basically out of luck. And now he's got to figure out, and honestly, taking a very small hit right now while he figures it out is good, but there will be things available to him as a primary residence that won't be with an investment property. 404-872-0750 is our number. And Wendy, if your son wants to call next week, I'll be here. 53 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
57 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I wanted to just stay a moment on this conversation that we just had with Wendy, whose son is underwater and just bought a new car. In his $30,000 underwater, he can't refinance and wants to move on with his life. And this is a period of time that, while the economy is getting better, requires tough choices for people to make. And if you're facing this kind of tremendous imbalance where your house could be at risk, your future credit history could be at risk, All of these things require you to make some sacrifices. And there are so many people in Atlanta that I have heard from, thousands, who have made tremendous sacrifices in order to keep their homes and have to balance it out. And, you know, Wendy's son has made a choice that's sort of interesting, you know, driving around his new car. He also is not the one who's calling for some advice. She is. And unfortunately, we've heard over the last 6-10 months from parents who are trying to help their kids, like, wake up to what the reality of this actually means. And I'm not sure parents can do that, not when you have a grown child. And you can see them running 60 miles an hour into the wall, and they can't even see it when it's right in front of them. And as a parent, two boys, 14 and 16, right? I'm trying my hardest to step back and let them make the kind of mistake they're going to need to make in order to become productive adults. And in this case, you know, I'd love for Wendy's son, an open invitation. Give me a call. I'm here on Sundays, 11 to 1, and I'd be happy to walk you through what some of your options are. And if you want your mom to stay out of it, that's great. But then you have to take up the mantle and be ready to make those important decisions. 59 minutes past the hour, I'm Elise Glink. We'll be right back.
Expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSV.
Welcome back, everybody. It is 8 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. You're listening to the Elise Glink Show live on Sundays, usually 11 to 1, but we're cutting out at 12:30 today because of the game coming up. So we will just have half an hour or so to answer all of your questions. 404-872-0750, online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Let's go back to the phones. Ryan joins us on the line from Stockbridge. Hi, Ryan.
How you doing, ma'am?
Good. What's on your mind?
I'm having some questions regarding HARP 2 program, really finding banks that will participate in it.
Yeah, it's hard. They don't really want to make it easy. Have you gone to makinghomeaffordable.gov?
I have. I actually applied and through the original HARP program and went through and had them come out and do find out the home value and was denied on that basis, basically on loan to value. So now that the rules have changed, I've been trying to find somebody who's taking part in the new rule set and can't do so or haven't been able to at this point.
Well, how far underwater are you?
Over the 130. I'd say, like, I owe 130 and...
Yeah? House is worth, what, 70?
They have valued at 80.
80. Okay, so you're in the bigger category. And those programs really haven't gotten going yet. They were supposed to get going by the first quarter of this year, which we're sort of halfway in the middle of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for a lot of people, it hasn't started yet. So one thing you can do is you can call the Homeowners Hope Hotline, which is the number I gave out earlier, and I'll give it to you right now, 888-995-HOPE. And you can call and ask them tomorrow which of the lenders who are part of the HARP 2.0 program have actually started doing something.
Okay.
And they may be able to guide you a little bit better.
Okay, perfect.
All right.
And I'm wondering also if what I have you is when I talk to my current mortgage lender, they won't answer the question of whether they've taken on the HARP 2. They just ask for my loan number. And when they put that in, they now deny me. So I'm wondering, when they put those loan numbers in, is it based on maybe the old criteria until it gets updated, or?
Maybe. I don't know exactly.
I can't answer on why it's denied. If I ask why, then I just kind of get the customer no service or get transferred to somebody who's not answering their phone at this time.
So I guess what you want to do is start with the Homeowners Hope Hotline.
Yes, ma'am.
And then ask them the question. You also can file a complaint. Are you with one of the big lenders, national lenders?
Yes.
So you can also file a complaint at helpwithmybank.gov.
Okay.
And you can send me the number, the case number, and I will forward it to the OCC, which regulates all of the big lenders, the national lenders, and has been working with them as well. I would also just say that there is a lot of stuff going on in the lenders this week, as we just saw last week the $26 billion foreclosure settlement. Some of that is starting to make its way through the pipeline. It's going to take a while for those to get going, but there's some big changes that are ongoing right now, and I think it's just complicating a very bad, already bad customer service situation. But go file a complaint with helpwithmybank.gov. Send me the case number. I'll try to help you that way. And then talk to the HUD-certified housing counselors at 888-995-HOPE tomorrow.
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Have a good one. 12 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Allison joins us on the line. Hi, Allison.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's going on?
Basically, I had some medical bills and loss of jobs, so I filed bankruptcy and Chapter 7 and did not stop the bank from going around the bankruptcy to foreclose. I put the HOA into my bankruptcy, what I'd owed at that point in time, and got a notice in May that the big bank that owned my loan was going to go ahead and foreclose. In December, I got notice from the HOA that they were going to put a lien on my property, and up until that point, I was under the assumption that my house had sold and gone into foreclosure back on that first Tuesday in May.
Were you still living? Were you still living at the property at the time?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
I had actually. In December when I had filed bankruptcy, I vacated the property,
okay.
And I let them know that so that they could take it as soon as possible because I didn't have any way to pay on it. So I wasn't going to try and fight them taking the property back. Basically, what happened was the foreclosure didn't go through in May because the lawyers couldn't find the assignment, is what they were saying. They couldn't prove that the big bank owned the deed because they couldn't locate it, and no one ever notified me of that. So the lien went through on the HOA this past November. They found the assignment in December and actually foreclosed. The bank did, not the HOA, December 6th. So now I got served papers the other day, last week actually, from the HOA saying they're going to sue me. And I was under the assumption that when the house foreclosed that the bank was going to be paying the back dues of the HOA because of the lien. But the bank is saying that they're not going to, I guess, ratify the lien or they're not going to pay it. So I didn't know what I do. And
you need more help than I can give you.
Yeah.
You need to, I'm sorry, I'm not a bankruptcy attorney, or any kind of attorney. And what you need is some legal counsel to help you understand what you actually are liable for and what you're not. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you're still in touch with your bankruptcy attorney. Or
yeah, I am. And basically, I guess my main question was on a lien, though. How does a lien work? Basically, when, like, if an HOA puts a lien on your home,
when the property is sold, then the HOA is paid off from the proceeds. If there are no proceeds, right, it's a foreclosure, there won't be any proceeds, they're out of luck unless they can figure out who else to sue. It's not surprising that they would sue you, but I'm not sure that they have a claim on you.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, that was my main question.
All right. I definitely think you should talk to your bankruptcy attorney, though.
Mm-hmm.
And there is something about judgments that are, you know, and again, I'm not a lawyer, but the fact that this came in after the bankruptcy may or may not mean that you owe it, and you'll have to figure out what exactly that is.
Gotcha.
All right?
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Allison. Thanks for calling the show. 15 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Michael joins us on the line from Sarasota. Hey, Michael.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have a question. I'm interested in acquiring a reverse mortgage for my condominium.
Okay.
And I called a mortgage lender that's approved by HUD. And everything was going well until I told him I lived in a condominium. He said, uh-oh. He said, unless the condominium is FHA approved, you can't get a reverse mortgage.
And do you know why?
I do not know why, exactly. And he said, well, it has a lot to do with the fact that they don't want to give out a reverse mortgage to a condominium because a lot of times there's, one, too many renters in the building,
right.
Or two, there's too many foreclosures in the building, or Three, there's too many delinquencies in the building.
Well, the reason sort of underlying all of those, which are true, those are more like symptoms.
Right.
But the actual illness is that FHA is sort of the prime backer now of reverse mortgages.
Right.
And unfortunately, it's starting to become a problem because seniors who had done these reverse mortgages and then spent all the money didn't realize they still had to pay property taxes and insurance.
Right.
And so they are basically abandoning these reverse mortgages, and HUD is getting FHA and HUD are getting somewhat stuck by the bill. It's not a huge problem yet, but it could be. And so they've become very, very persnickety since FHA is the main way to get these loans right now, as that's indeed what it is, that when it's in a building, a condo building, they have just taken these rules and regulations sort of way down the path.
Exactly.
So it's become extremely difficult to get one for a condo.
And do you know how I talked to my condo management company, and he wasn't familiar about how to go about even approaching HUD to get FHA approval.
Well, FHA approval is really important for a condo association these days, but it's a long process that could take 6 to 8 months. And they probably will need a real estate attorney to help them with at least part of it. There are a lot of documents to fill out.
Uh-huh.
HUD has to look at the number of renters. It looks at the amount of money that's in the reserves. It's all kinds of really crazy stuff. And so walking your condo association through that would be maybe a part-time job for the next 6 to 8 months as you get all the documents and you satisfy all those needs. But it would be really good for the condo association because FHA is now approving, 25-30% of all loans. And I assume that people who are moving in there are still buying with loans.
Yeah, it's hard to get loans. Everybody's walking in with cash, which is what I've seen.
Well, if they're walking in with cash, then what concerns me is that it's probably become a big building for rental property.
No, there aren't that many on the market. No, I'm in good shape. I have no problem with the condo. I've been here for 21 years, and I've been on the board. So I know the condo is solid. Management company to invest his money in getting the approval when it's really going to help, a few number of the residents, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you would have to help them do it. They're not going to do it on their own.
Right.
Unless you can show them that there's some real reason, like if people want to buy properties here and they want to get a loan, they're not going to be able to get one.
Right, okay.
So what percentage, just to make it really easy, what percentage of your building is actually rented at the moment?
Oh, way under what it should be. It's maybe 5% or so.
Great. So,
and the delinquency is under 10%. So,
great.
The building is good, and I know we could get the approval. It's just a question of how much would it cost, and is it fair to the other residents who would have no reason to want a reverse mortgage to assume some of the cost?
Well, I don't know that it would. I think it could be. You could lead the charge as a former board member and invest your time in doing it.
Right.
So since you're the one who's going to primarily benefit from it, I would imagine that would be a worthwhile use of your time.
Could do that. Where do I start?
Well, you would probably have to start with a conversation with a real estate attorney, but you can go to the HUD website, and you can call, and you can even call HUD or go into a local HUD office. And
okay.
You can start there by getting the paperwork and the information and finding out what the process will be.
And getting it started. So
exactly.
Are HUD offices, are they local or are they like major city? Like I'm south of Tampa. Is that where I'd
should
probably...
be? There should be one in Tampa.
Yeah, but there wouldn't be one in Sarasota, right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, if I had more time, I would go look it up for you on the web, but you can look it up on the web.
I can look it up myself. I don't want to tie you up. Okay, well, you've kind of helped me a lot, so...
Well, I'm kind of glad I did.
Okay.
Have a great day, Michael. I appreciate the call. It's 21 minutes past the hour. We're going to do a prize pack when we come back. Stay tuned for more on News Talk WSB.
Anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
26 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. You're listening to the Elise Klink Show. We have a prize pack to give away, the prize value $508. This is a really cool one. It includes a pair of tickets to see Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers in concert on April 29th at Verizon Wireless Amphitheater, produced by ASO Presents, a maintenance agreement for your home's HVAC system, courtesy of Shumate Air Conditioning and Heating, and a full synthetic oil change, courtesy of Braxton Automotive. Again, that prize value, $508. Awesome. We're going to give it away to the fifth caller at 404-741-0750. 404-741-0750. Be nice to Fred. He's taking your call. It is now 27 minutes past the hour, and we are, unfortunately, out of time. And that's because coming up next, actually, is the UGA basketball game, and the pregame starts at 12:30, or at least 12:35 right after the news. So we're going to go to that now. I will be back next week. Don't forget, for the latest news, weather, and traffic, stay tuned to News Talk WSB, coming up at the top of the hour. We also want you to pick up your, or I should say bottom of the hour, pick up your Sunday AJC for an investigative report that exposes who benefits the most from changes to the HOPE scholarship and what happened to the $1 million alternative scholarship program, which is something incredibly important. Also, be sure to sign up for the free weekly newsletter at thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. And don't forget to leave us your comments on the Equifax Finance blog, especially in our personal finance family money section. All right, guys, that's about it for me today. The UGA game is next. Then after that, there's the weekly checkup show. Alan Hunt is on 6 to 9 and Kim Komando 9 to midnight. I'm Elise Klink. I'll be back next week. And in the meantime, I hope it's a great week.